Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmitz. And in a time where our podcast has been an unlikely source of news and calls to action and lots of different things in the Looney Tunes community, we figure we might as well put our stance and our voice, no pun intended because I don't fucking have any this week, to good use. By once again advertising and speaking the praises of the Warner Archive video department and their initiative to continue to release those unsung heroes of the Looney Tunes canon in their collector's choice editions. Number 3 is out this week, and we're going to give you 3 shorts from it because we're that good.
Yes. For we here at That's Not Quite All, Folks, support the Warner Archive. Not Warner Brothers.
The Warner Archive. We support Jerry, George, and maybe some of the other good people in that division who may or may not have been really good to me and my family back when a prominent member of my family used to do DVD sales with Warner Brothers. So any of the people in that circle are all good. It's just the people at the tippy top can go die. Jerry, George, everybody else, y'all are beautiful, okay? Seriously, you're doing great work.
Yes. So, these shorts that we are looking at today are Egghead Rides Again, Punch Drunk, and War in Pieces.
And this is an eclectic one, because we got one, like, 30s or 40s one. One from the 50s that I knew about from a Looney Tunes compilation film. And one from the very end of the Golden Age. So we're really running the gamut here, guys.
Which, hey, that means that Jerry and George are as well. They're like, okay, let's pick shorts that cover the whole timeline of the Looney Tunes history. And by golly, do these three do that. So let's go into the first short here today. So the first short we got here is Egghead Rides Again. Came out on July 17th, 1937. Regardless of what happened on that day, Egghead became a thing. Literally, my source for news was like, hey, the Egghead character, a early predecessor to Elmer Fudd, came out on this day. I'm like, yes. Thank you, news sources.
Sure.
You are correct. I know that. I'm covering it. Do you have anything else? Well, a train derailment, the township of Berta in Bihar, British India, killed 107 people. Okay, news source, that's
enough. What's that? Egghead's coming to town. Oh, the humanity.
Oh... Gandhi's not going to be happy about that.
You hooligans!
So, this short was directed by Tex Avery. A writer isn't credited. So, we're going to guess Tex Avery and the folks at Warner Bros. At the time.
If I had to throw a name out, I'd say Dave Monahan, because he was writing a lot of Tex cartoons in this era. Yeah, but that is based off of nothing.
So, some fun facts about this cartoon. First appearance of Egghead. Very much a prominent character in the early to late 30s. In the mid to late 30s. Yeah. Before they knew what they were doing, eventually it would morph and change into the Elmer Fudd character we're all familiar with. And, also a fun fact, of the zooming sound effect that's applied to the Warner Brothers shield makes its first appearance in this cartoon. Which is neat. Yeah. That's neat. It's like, like the things are coming together. It's like,
that's
the
one of the all-time great sound effects.
It is. And it's just a slide guitar. It's very, that's all it is. It's so simple.
And plus, with this screwed up throat I have, I could actually do a really good impression of it. Boo.
Boo.
So,
we begin this cartoon with our main character, Egghead, voiced by Mel Blanc because he's doing his wacky Daffy voice.
Get on, little doggy! Get on! Yippee-yay! Larry, come on, little doggy! Just an old cowhand, that's what I am!
Which is Daffy.
Yeah, it sounds an awful lot.
Because Egghead is in his apartment complex, but he acts like a child. He's pretending he's a cowboy. As we cut down to the lobby, as the landlord of the place has the simple lines of Darn Barnett. Darn Barnett, Barnett, darn it, darn bang, barn that stupid Egghead, barn, darn it,
Deck
darn
burner,
it,
barn
it, darn it, darn it. I can't believe a writer wasn't credited for this cartoon.
Well, Dad Burn, that Dad Burn noise, Dad Burn it. I'll put a stop to that, Dad Burn it.
I mean, to be fair, Billy Bletcher does a really good job with it. Because it's which I believe it is. And it's just like, oh, Dad Burn it, Dad Burn this, and Dad. And just like more and more and more. It's really silly. And Billy Bletcher doesn't have a lot else to do in this cartoon, so at least he got to do that.
Yeah. So the landlord throws Egghead out of his apartment for causing a ruckus. As Egghead looks at the newspaper and sees that there is an ad in the paper for someone to work on this ranch. To work on the, what's the name of it? It's very silly. It's like the Woohoo something.
God, I forget.
Uh-huh. It's in Woohoo, Wyoming.
One, but I know it's in Wyoming.
It's in Woohoo, Wyoming. So he writes a letter to, emails himself as we go over to this ranch. As we get the Merry Melody part of this cartoon, I believe. They're just singing this song all down the prairie.
Well, yeah, they have the sportsmen again.
Yep. As they sing this song, as eventually they find that the Pony Express is coming. So they all hop on their horses. They're making big whooping sounds. They're very intense as they move like 2 feet over to get to the mailbox, which, okay, that's very, very Avery type of joke there. As they get the letter from the Pony Express, an Egghead just falls right out of the envelope.
Yeah, that's pretty silly. There's a lot of just silly bits in this first part. Like the gag of the saloon doors being shaped like the people that go in and out of them.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know why the sound of horses and cowboys heading off sounds like a bunch of chickens listening to Bing Crosby.
So Egghead introduces himself to the cowboys, saying, yes, and I'm Egghead. And I'm very much, you know, I want to be a cowboy. And then the voice shifts over to someone else. He's like,
and I saw your dad, so I came for the job.
Because today I am a man.
I'm just sitting over here being like, okay, Jordan gave Misha in the past for going in later and dubbing in dialogue. That's clearly what this is. It's like, what was that? Like, I kind of get it. Like, he's trying to buffer up his voice to sound manly, but it just sounded awkward.
Hey, what are you trying to say about people that deepen themselves to sound manly, Mark?
I think you'll find that some of us don't have a choice in the matter. Some of us are just sick.
But there are some good moments here. So yeah. It's around this point in the cartoon where the cowboy is like, okay, Egghead, gonna do some tests to make sure you can actually pull off being in our gang, essentially. And I really like just, they cut over to like some cowboy out in the field, and it's clearly like a staff member or whatever, just
okay,
yelling,
boss! Why, thank you, Pepper Boy!
I see what you did there.
Oh,
Chris
Pratt
is birthday, very sly. Anyways, so they cut to this random guy, and he just sticks out his tongue, puts out a whole bunch of tobacco in it, because it's the late 30s, and dying from this thing hasn't existed yet. As he just puts it in his mouth, sticks it out, it's a cigarette, it's like, okay, shoot it, shoot me. As Egghead shoots the guy. He gets hit, falls into his hat, and it's like, oh, you got me.
Alright.
This is very much like an animation-focused sort of cartoon. Like, there are gags here, but most of it's just like, look how wacky this is. He fell into his hat. And then we get, like, our main gag focus of the short, which is he's given a branding, I don't know what it is. I don't live in the area. You know, like, okay.
A branding iron, you mean?
The cow. Branding iron, yeah. It's literal, of course it is. As like, okay, here's the branding iron. There's the calf. Go brand it, and we'll bring you as part of the group. And then there's a dust cloud, and it's like, oh no, he branded the other cowboys. Womp womp.
But I like the bit where the cow just sort of strolls out without being branded. Like, eh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Love the personality of this cow. And we get this chase sequence as Egghead and the cow are in this chase to get branded. And of course, you know, the small character jumps over the big horses and he goes out with a small little horse as a little bit of the merry-go-round broke down plays. That's nice.
Yeah, I like that.
The only joke I wrote here during this sequence is where, because, you know, like the calf runs and then hides underneath a cliff face, and then Egghead jumps over and misses him, and then they just do a big jump back, and it's like, whatever. The one thing I did kind of like was the calf is running, sees this hillside, runs down the hillside, Egghead comes towards the same cliffside, and the horse just goes the other way as there's stairs that lead down the cliffside, which, like, okay.
I love that. The cliff face just has a staircase. But yeah, all the running scenes here are really well animated. And there's a lot of just, again, throughout this, a lot of really good animation. And they really know how to do this sort of Wyoming prairie landscape. And it does lift this from just a simple Egghead cartoon where a lot of the punchlines are just like, well, he sucks.
So Egghead finally has the calf cornered. There's a tussle, a smoke cloud appears again, and it turns out that the calf has tied up Egghead. And I kind of thought that's where it was going to end. Like, yeah, da 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 da. No, there's more. As the cowboys are just so humored by how bad Egghead is at being a cowboy, they're like, hey, you, come with us. As Egghead done a very long, prolonged, sad sequence. But, they're like, hey, listen, Egghead, we like how funny you are. So because you think you're so funny, we'll have you be the shit boy.
Yes, come here, shit boy.
As Egghead says, you know, Egghead sweeps again. The end. Decent all-around cartoon. I didn't really get a feel for the Egghead character in this. He's very much just like, yep, he's a man-child, essentially. It's like, okay, he's a man-child who sucks. So what? You know, this really did feel like, you know, well, we need a main character for this story. Sure, his name is Egghead. He's a blank canvas to put their gags onto. Really not much of personality.
Yeah, kind of.
And decent enough gag. We're left a bit to be desired, honestly. But the animation helped. You know, very much, you know, a good exercise in doing crazy cartoony animation in this time. But that's the most I can give it.
To me, the strengths of this one were the sequences of Egghead chasing the calf, and I really wish Tex had realized that, because the rest of this is kind of very one-note Egghead sucks kind of stuff. Like, it doesn't really find itself until we get that the actual chase. If the whole cartoon had been that, then it would be a lot better for me. I mean, there's good animation, there's good gags. The funny is kind of hidden. You have to find where the funny is, and once it's there, it doesn't last long enough, so... You know, it's parts of this are good, just the rest isn't.
So I'm going to give this animal rating of 3 out of 5.
Yeah, that's what I'm giving it. There's some good stuff in here, but there's just some clear issues. So we go now to, of the three of these, the one I had seen before. This is Punch Trunk. Yes, because, you know, obviously we covered the This was in 1001 Rabbit Tales? Or was this in Quackbusters? No, this was in Quackbusters. Yeah, this was in Quackbusters. This one came out on December 19th, 1953. Like yours, Mark, this was one where there wasn't a hell of a lot that happened on this day. I had the Robert Millikan, who won the Nobel Prize in 1923 for science. He died on that day. That's all I could find. All right. Chuck Jones directed Punch Drunk. Michael Maltese wrote it. Robert C. Bruce narrates it. So first of all, when I found this cartoon, and this was actually kind of weird, I actually found a music-only rip of this before I found the actual one.
Yeah, so same.
I found one without the narration, same. Without the dialogue. Oh, good.
I was watching it going, and here's the crazy thing. I was watching it going like, this kind of works without the dialogue. It's like, you could have told me this had no dialogue. I wouldn't believe you. But yeah. Eventually, I noticed there were like way too many mouths moving. I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure there's supposed to be some dialogue.
It's like,
here.
Okay, there's probably dialogue here because I can't follow the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, this starts with, you know, Robert C. Bruce narrating it. And because the whole thing is that there's a tiny elephant that arrives in a banana shipment. And there's a weird animation thing this cartoon does when we see the elephant in profile behind the bananas, and then we see a completely different designed elephant walk out into view. It's a weird, like, I don't know if it was shadow work or something, but it was just a weird proto design before we saw the actual thing.
I do like how it's from the SS Michael Maltese.
Yes. Very cheeky. There's one of two very cheeky things they do in here. And I love the reaction of the guy that spots him, where his eyes roll back into his head and he just faints. This cartoon is very much like blackout gag variations on a theme, and the theme of which being there is a tiny elephant roaming the streets and everyone doesn't know how to react to this, or knows how to react to it, but reacts to it the one way. Now, it's very funny because the first one is where he ends up in somebody's bird bath, and I love the timing of the elephant hosing off the bird, giving him what for hogging the bird bath. Just, you know,
like the gibberish screaming.
The guy who owns the house is, or at least the place next door is calling the cops, like, hey, there's an elephant in my bird bath. And, you know, they call a mental assignment. I'm taking him away. And it's like, but I did see an elephant in my bird bath. Sure. I keep a giraffe in mine. Just a very, there's, like you said, there's not a lot of real use for the dialogue in here, but that is a very, very well-written bit.
It also kind of sounds like a Ringo line from the Beatles. there's a giraffe in my bird bath. Oh, there's an elephant in mine.
The visual, like, again, they do a lot of just very brief gags that are, you know, versions of this. I love the visual of the woman leaping straight into the washing machine and looking at with panicked eyes. It's pretty funny.
You know, for some reason, when I saw that moment, how was that going? If this was a TV edit, they may cut that because, you know, don't want kids to get ideas about going in the washing machines.
Don't go in the washing machine, children. That would be bad. The PSA, you know, that would come about.
If you see a tiny elephant, do not go into your washing machine.
No, I just think about the campaign they would have, and they would have the Troy McClure type. It's like, if you've seen a tiny elephant running around your neighborhood, it's best to not follow it into the washing machine. Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such bits on this show as the one from So Much for So Little, and also probably other ones. We have. I also really like this gag where the guy's testing out his new glasses. He sees the elephant and angrily stomps back into the optometrist to beat him up.
That, I think, is my favorite bit. Because it's just so perfectly timed. Just like, goes back pizza.
And just the doctor looking out after being beaten up, like,
yeah.
That's funny. That's now, the thing is that, like, in addition to these short gags where the premise is easy to find, you also have a couple of longer gags. Like, this mother and daughter bit is a lot of setup, and it honestly dragged for me. But the whole thing where it's like, you know, no, there's an elephant in my dollhouse. Oh, that don't be silly, go to bed. And then, no, really, there isn't. Oh, really? And then you finally get the elephant popping out and the mom fainting. And that's kind of worth it, but it just took a while to get
there. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a good instance of the John and Marcia bit that they always go to in these cartoons.
Yeah.
My thought when the kid shows up is, oh, look, it's Cindy Lou Who's cousin. Cindy Who now?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's you can tell Chuck Jones is doing this because, yeah, it's very much like, you know, kid character. You know, I don't think it's the same voice actress. It isn't, but because it's not June. It's a very innocuous and sort of overlong bit that should have been better.
Could have been just cut down to the cake bit and then just get rid of the first.
Exactly. Part. Yeah. You know, save time because you're doing a lot of quick blackouts. You don't want to mess up the timing and the pacing. So I like the next one with the drunk, which immediately works because of the wobbly orchestral rendition of "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" that we have here. You're late. He always used to be pink. And just very silly. I also love the sign he passes that just says no, no.
Now, I think if they really wanted to PSA it, just be like, he gets into his car, drives by, no, no. This has been a public service announcement.
Hello, I'm Ringo Starr. I used to do that.
Drive.
I don't do that no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. No, thank you, please. It makes the elephant sneeze. Then it makes it hard to find the door. Peace and love.
So even in your worst voice state, you still do Ringo and Troy McClure. Oh, we are so
back.
We
are so back.
Hi,
I'm Troy McClure. I'm Ringo. Peace and love. What else can I do? God. Can I even do Frizz? Let's see if I can do Frizz. We were trying to be, sort of. I can sort of do Frizz. The rest of these are quicker and more like, okay, the circus elephant whose jaw drops as the music juts to a halt when he sees the elephant he's hanging on to. That was pretty good. But, you know, again, a little overdone.
Yeah, like the one that I liked was the therapist office.
Oh, I love that.
That was
one.
Interesting.
That was so good.
Because it just, you know, it's, I'm pretty sure it's June, I'm pretty sure. Right? Like a lot of voices are in this, yeah. I think. It's like, yes, you know, me and mother, you know. And mother used to spank me hard. Hey.
We were trying to make these for ourselves, not for children.
It's just weird to hear. It leads up to you, it's like, yeah, spanking, yes.
Hey, Rocky, yes. Oh, where are you going with that?
And then they just sees the elephant, and they switch places. Like, you see, I wasn't good with my mother. And
my father didn't take me to the circus one time, and I...
And I saw a man die, a family even.
Yes.
I think a millionaire.
The thing about sharks is they've got the darkest eyes, the blackest eyes that follow you wherever you go. Anyway, 57 men went in the water, and only 3 came out.
Alright.
When in doubt, go for
Jaws. We get this montage. Sure. So we get this montage of all these newspapers where it's like, oh, neighborhood shaken by elephant menace or whatever. And the Variety article, when it cut to Variety, I wrote down here, okay, Chuck, calm the hell down. Okay. what even was it? Like, yeah. It's supposed to be like
a... It was alliteration of the damned.
I don't know. Alliteration, yeah, pretty much alliteration of the damned. Like, I was like, Chuck, I do not have the time. Okay, buddy, I do not have the time.
I know pachyderm was in there. Yeah, I also like the one gag with the acrobat where, you know, all the people look down, see the elephant, and like immediately shoot to the top of the building, clanging onto the acrobat.
Just shoot to the top.
That's great. Now, this does have kind of a nothing ending because we have this noted scientist who I believe was named Robert Bruce something, which, and... The scientist is like, well, this wasn't, you know, there's no possible way this would happen as the elephant literally crawls onto the table and the broadcaster can see it. And then it just sort of ends.
The broadcaster going like, listen, folks, I do not represent the company, but,
yeah.
falls backwards.
There's no escalation.
Fires out. What have I done here? Oh, the end. Yeah. Oh. Oh, it's the end. Okay.
That's the thing. You have to build to something. It just what I get the idea of is that you had just all these blackout gags, and then it just and then you ran out and the cartoon ended. So, and that happens sometimes, but you tend to want to build to something when you're doing these blackout cartoons. But this was at least a cool idea for a short, and I do like a lot of the blackout gags we had here. There are obviously flaws. I think this would have been better suited for, honestly, a fuller-length feature with more of a story. And I wish there was more variation in the reactions to the elephant. A lot of them are just like, oh, they're surprised, and they think they're crazy. You know, there is still some charm to this idea. It was just not as varied as I would have liked.
You know what this could have been? Look at this, because yes, he was friends with the guy. This could have been a Dr. Seuss book.
Yeah, honestly.
This could have been a Dr. Seuss adaption. It probably would have been better, I think, because then if he had Ted Geisel, he could write a story that has a beginning.
He's rather good at those.
And you have Chuck come in and do all the blackout gags. It would probably be a better version of this short than what we have currently. But that being said, it's a decent one-off short. I mean, it's definitely what you see is what you get. That's pretty much what this cartoon is.
Pretty much. But, you know, there is some fun stuff in it, but it's not, you know, I can see why they didn't do follow-ups. Why this doesn't have the acclaim of something like One Froggy Evening. I'm giving this a 3.5 out of 5. Maybe I'm being a bit generous, but, you know, it did some things right.
I'm also going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
All right. Let's go to the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon. I'm sure that'll bring up the quality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. We love his shorts.
Help.
So, this last short, His War and Pieces, came out on June 6th, 1964. You know what that means? Beatlemania was in full swing. So, on this day, the Beatles arrived in the Netherlands.
Yes.
And I watched a video of it, because there was a newsreel of it, and it's pretty much like, I see you on the Final Four. Here's a fun fact. A Ringo wasn't there.
Was the food too spicy?
The Netherlands? I'll fucking know.
Vegetable too spicy?
I don't know. But it's like, hey, you know, Ringo gonna arrive, but, you know, I'm pretty sure he knows what he's missing. And the Fab Four joined live in the Netherlands. And
wait a minute. Who played the drums then? Pete, you're not going to believe this, but we got a gig for you. I told you, I don't do this anymore. Yeah, well, this is a big one. A real big one, see?
Jimmy Nickel.
John, Paul, George, and Jimmy.
It was their only shows on Dutch soil. So imagine that, right? You're like, oh man, I really wanted to see Ringo. Oh well, they'll come back.
They did not come back.
Damn. Ron Howard, narrator.
They did not
come back.
No. Eventually, Ringo would probably come back solo, where he would be introduced to his first love. That's right. Weed.
Well, actually, apparently there was some inspiration on this trip. According to the Beatles Bible, while on their canal tour, the Beatles saw some local students wearing capes, which later inspired their look for the Help film and the cover of the Help album. So they came back from the Netherlands, went to Ringo and went, hey, Ringo, we're gonna buy capes.
Oh, really?
Hey, well, I'm buying capes. They're like, yes, capes. Okay, Julian.
You know what doesn't come off on a cape? Alfredo sauce. Trust me, I know. No, I don't wear a cape anymore. I'm tired of picking it up on the floor. No, thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze.
And the spongy, I'm seeing this photo right here of the one of the performances. I'll send you in the Discord. Okay. Man, a lot of advertisers on this thing, because it's like
Heineken, Honda, Coke.
Heineken, Honda, and Coke. So, you know, you got the beer for the 18-year-olds, the Coke for the teenagers, and the Honda for the
men.
I don't know. For the men.
Yeah, let's drive a Honda.
War and Pieces was directed by Chuck Jones and Maurice Noble. Written by John Dunn. Rutrow.
And who's the music by, Mark?
Hoo boy. William. Wait, no, because this isn't a 9 hours short. Bill.
Lava. Bill!
Bill Lava the fucking hack.
Bill Lava the fucking hack.
Bill
We were trying to make these for ourselves, not for children.
Bill Lava the fucking hack.
The thing about sharks is we've got the darkest eyes.
What's the matter, Bill?
Some fun facts about war and pieces. You know, I never thought I'd reach this day, Jordan, but this is the last Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
The last one.
Well, okay. This was Chuck Jones' last Roadrunner cartoon and the last Chuck Jones directed Warner Bros. Cartoon to be released in the classic era, if we're not counting the recut shorts from the Adventure Roadrunner pilot that we covered way back. So
he wouldn't go again until the Christmas special in 79.
So our short begins with a chase with Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote as we get a very obnoxious clank sound effect when they pause. Yeah. It's very obnoxious.
We are in the age of obnoxious sound effects.
It reminded me of the clank sound effect used in the beloved YouTube show, The Yearlies. Oh.
But that's a good clank. That's a great clank.
And just to be clear, I'm referring to the sound effect, not the person clanking.
Oh, okay,
clanking.
Okay.
The person.
Oh, that clank.
Not the person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one.
Oh, that's a great one.
It reminded me of that. It reminded me of that sound effect.
Can you imagine if that happened in a YouTube cartoon? If all of a sudden you hear the sound of a pipe dropping.
It would fit it better. Did you write down the...
I did. I always do. Roadrunner is Burnham-up's Asphaltius, and Coyote is Caninus Nervous Rex. Now, it's very interesting how they started this cartoon, because they've combined the proof of concept gag with a traditional gag. So instead of just doing a gag that establishes that the Roadrunner is fast and the Coyote isn't, they do that while also doing a grenade gag. And I do like that the freeze frame hits as the grenade comes back towards Wile E.
Yes. That's actually really
funny.
Funny
expression.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. This bow gag is kind of silly, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, because the whole thing is that, like, he gets himself into a bow, launches, and his bottom half gets stuck, and you see him, like, with his underwear. And, like, does that mean there's been a guy in the Wile E costume this whole time? Is that why his Latin name sounds like the name of a gay furry?
What's the next gag?
No, because the end of that is just too simple of a subversion, because, you know, he gets on his feet and you think he's going to fall hard, but he just falls on a lower part of the cliff face. And then as he sort of gets himself together, the cliff face just falls. And, it's like, okay, sure, fine.
It's still what like Coyote cartoons do, right?
The next one is the sensor-activated crushing wall, which has some good pieces.
Oh, yeah.
I like the moment where Wiley's frantically tapping his foot, waiting for the Roadrunner to trip the sensor.
He's just like, come on. I do like just the Roadrunner's, like, move slightly to the laser. Yeah. Wiley gets swooshed.
I mean, again, the outcome, and you're going to find this is a running thing in this cartoon, the outcome isn't as good as some of the payoff to the gag. Like, they set up a really cool gag, and they go with a kind of an easy outcome. Like, okay, Wile E gets in the way. Okay, fine. This next one's the same, where the outcome isn't as good as the rest of everything around it. And this is the one where Wile E paints himself invisible.
Yes. The best way to save our animation.
You know, but they do some clever things here, because I like the bit where he realizes he forgot to get his tail, and has the question mark exclamation point that comes up. And then, again, the outcome fails this gag, because it's just him getting hit with a truck. But I like the invisible aftermath of it, of Wile E stumbling on his feet, and then off the cliff, and then through clouds. Like, I like that. I like how that's depicted.
I like that. Yeah. The cloud bit made it kind of worth it for me.
Because that's a cool vision.
But now, what do you think about this moment? Because I know you don't like when they establish this.
I don't.
He lands into a body of water.
In a desert.
As a fish in a desert, as a fish goes up to him and he holds him a sign saying, get lost.
I like that a lot, actually. But yeah. There shouldn't be water in this world. There shouldn't. But I like that at least there was a good gag attached to it. Now, this next one is one of those that I shouldn't like as much as I did, because it's this sort of Secrets of the Harem slideshow, which is like, you know, you look through and you see all the girls or whatever. And the whole thing is that Wily sets it up so that, you know, what the Roadrunner would look through it and a gun would go off. And of course, because logic is on and physics is on the Roadrunner side, you just hear him excitedly meeping, looking through the little scope.
Beep, 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 beep.
And it implies that the Roadrunner is just a horny bastard, which I kind of laughed at that, like, okay, sure, fine. And then I also like the timing of Wily coming in to look and then getting blasted.
So my issue with that gag, in so much Roadrunner getting horny, I just didn't like the look of Wily after the blast.
Yeah.
I don't know. It looked like they just drew a bad lion.
Kind of.
That makes any fucking sense. It's like, that doesn't look like Wile E. Coyote. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's there's some awkward design things that sort of hold this back, and
The next gag here is where I wrote down here, this is where the crazy sound effects come into play, because oh my god, do they become loud and obnoxious for no good reason.
And they hinder some ideas that are honestly kind of awesome, like the idea of accidentally tearing a hole in the sky with a hook and causing a lightning strike to come down on you. It's a kind of wild, creative gag I can let slide. I just wish a better era of Wile E. Coyote cartoons would do it.
Yeah, I agree. And then we get this ending.
This bit I really wanted you to watch.
Okay. I'm going to summarize it. And then we can talk about it. So, Wile E. has lit up a rocket. He's going to aim the rocket.
It opens simple enough. It's just a rocket.
So he blasts off. Of course, he's off by a couple of centimeters. So he rounds around and he goes into the ground. And, okay, I just watched this. So I'm watching going like, okay, center of the earth. Okay, it's fine. Going, goes past like the sun, the center of the earth. There. I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny. And then he lands in China, and I'm going, okay, I've seen this before. okay, what's going to happen? And a Roadrunner comes out, he's wearing a rice hat, no eyes are visible, as he goes, meet me, in a foreign language.
You see the little Chinese characters.
Stuff does the little Chinese characters. And, okay, and then all of a sudden, Wile E is like, guess I'm chasing this now. Chases the Roadrunner. Lands into a Chinese gong. Lands into a gong. Throws him off. Lands back into the hole. He gets shot all the way back to the desert setting. As he's on the ground. Defeated. And then the Chinese Roadrunner pops his head out. Does the meep again as we fade into the letters. What? It's something offensive.
The end, ancient Chinese proverb.
And that's where it ends. Let's go. What'd you think?
Do you want my honest opinion, Mark?
What'd you think of this? Yeah.
You know, honestly, I didn't think this one was as racist as Tweety and the Beanstalk.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. No. Nowhere near. No, absolutely not. From what I could tell, again, the print we watched was like a stretched out Boomerang copy, so I can't really tell how, like, Asian they made this Roadrunner. From my perspective, it just looked like they just put a rice hat on the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
I don't think he has squinty teeth. I don't think he has, like, big...
I don't think that... It could have been far more racist.
I don't think he has squinty eyes. I don't think he has big teeth. Yeah, it's very minimal in the... In the Chinese appropriation of the Roadrunner.
But that doesn't mean the gag is well constructed. It's not, because it's just like...
No.
First of all, we have this overlong, overused animation of the center of the Earth that is basically done twice and not only fills time, but it's, you know, really easy animation because it's just, you know, running down a still. And then you don't really do much on the other side in China, and it's just immediately like goes back, and the gag doesn't go anywhere. It's a hollow gag, and it's just, there's not much to it at all. And then it just sort of ends with a shrug. Like, it's just not very good gag work. It's like, let's do this, and they didn't really think of a clever way of doing it.
Yeah, that's pretty much my thoughts exactly. What are that down here? I've gone much worse than expected. Yeah, absolutely me. I agree with myself.
Yes. Yes, that's good. You brought up a good point, me. Yeah, thanks, me.
You and I absolutely know how this could have gone worse is like when he hits the gong, Wily's face all of a sudden looks a little Asian. Like, it could have been way worse. And they don't do that, thank God.
Yeah, but it's still not great. It's just...
It's not great.
Yeah.
It's not great. And I'll say this right now. I'm not going to check off points for it because we've seen worse.
We have plenty of other things to check off points for.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, like, it's not like this is going to be a 5 out of 5 show and then this happens. Like, no, it was already on fucking tending ice, so,
yeah.
You know.
Wackicky Wabbit is more racist than this.
Weird ending aside, that's a... It's a later era Wile E. Coyote cartoon, all right. All the telltale signs are there. Nobody wants to do this anymore.
That's it. I'm leaving.
that's the vibe I get, man. It's like you said, more better setups than punchlines in this. All these, it's so funny because like we keep like kind of like accidentally going into like, oh, here's like the last thing they did before the studio shut down. And you can tell, it's like, no one knew it was gonna end. Because all these efforts suck. They're all like...
The thrill is gone, man.
The thrill's gone. The love ain't there no more. Nobody wants to do this.
Everybody's done, including John. And the thing is, there actually were some nice moments in this. But there's pieces of gags, and entire gags, that don't work. And the animation is stockier and more limited. The Jonesian ideas are still there in places, if slightly hampered. I was honestly expecting to dislike this more, but it's closer to just plain okay than and unmemorable than just purely bad.
Yeah.
But it's not one of the better Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner ones, obviously.
I'm going to give the Anvil rating of 2.5 out of 5 anvils.
Yeah, I'll give it that as well. I had it a little higher initially, but I'm like, no, it doesn't even deserve 3. It's just not a very... It's not fresh. It's not exciting. It's just...
And I think what's really funny about this, Jordan, is like, I brought this up when I finished a cartoon. Connections Volume 3. I think what Jerry and George aim to do with Volume 3 is let's be a little more risky. Because there's this... It is a cartoon, dive cartoon on it called China Jones,
yes.
Which is also
quite racist.
Based around China. It's known notoriously as having a very racist like ending in particular. I think the ending is like Daffy like saying a bunch of stuff about the Chinese or something. I don't know. We haven't seen it. Because of course we haven't seen it. They didn't air it on Cartoon Network back when we were kids. I think. I don't know. But Neville, what you have? That's the thing, right? This initiative is to put all the Looney Tunes cartoons on home media, and we're now reaching that point now with Volume 3 where they're going like, okay,
we're gonna be a little bit more off color than usual.
And you know what? I absolutely get it because, you know, I assume maybe a part of this thing is like, you know, can we get Censored 11 on these? And I think based on maybe the reaction of Volume 3 or Volume 4.
I think it would sell.
Well, not like all 11. That would be crazy.
If they did it, it would sell.
It would. But like each one of those would have to have either Jerry or a Black History professor just come on.
Whoopee!
Hey, it's me again.
No.
I don't know why they keep bringing me back to these things, but they didn't get any better than the last time. So,
in fact, these may be worse.
Oh boy, you're not gonna believe these. They're gonna make you wish they said the Holocaust didn't exist. Not that I would do that.
Anyways, buy Looney Tunes Captain's Choice Volume 3 in stores tomorrow.
Yes, please.
Well, actually, no, not in digital stores tomorrow, you know. We do want more of these, even if we didn't particularly enjoy these three we covered. All right. Let's see what you guys had to say about these shorts. We have a comment from our Patreon at Judy M. Taylor, who has thoughts about all three shorts. So for Egghead Writes Again, Judy says that their thoughts on the short were so-so. It was her first time watching an Egghead cartoon after hearing about him, and now I'm a bit puzzled how Elmer evolved from him. He sounded more like the Bugs prototype Happy Rabbit. I felt bad for him because he was just a kid trying to impress the cowboys, but they all just laughed at him. And there's a sad crying emoji. I love how he managed to mail himself inside his application letter. That's one way to make an impression with your employer. Yeah, you see, that's why it's kind of weird, because some sources, they say like, oh, Egghead didn't really evolve from Elmer, or vice versa. And I think there's like some similarities. I mean, clearly they did. If you look at Egghead, look at Elmer, you can tell that Elmer's kind of this redefined look that's derivative from the Egghead prototype when it comes to Elmer Fudd's design. So I think it's more about Elmer's design that came from Egghead more than the personality, because the personality is absolutely not there with Egghead. All right, for Punch Trunk, Judy says it was a nice little one-off short that made me smile. My favorite part was the lady washing her clothes seeing the elephant for the first time. Her reaction was priceless. I also like how the little girl was the only one who wasn't afraid of the elephant. All the adults are freaking the hell out, and she's here giving it free food and housing. Yeah, that's the innocence of children for ya. Yeah, I think children have a bigger imagination, so they're more used to like, oh yeah, of course there's a small elephant right in front of me. I pictured a tiny giraffe the other week. Guards of War and Pieces, Judy says, the War and Pieces was a good Roadrunner and Coyote number, but you could tell Chuck had already cleared out his desk by the time the short was done. Yeah. I absolutely loved Wally's face in the opening line gag right before the grenade hits him. It was at this moment Wily knew he fucked up. Judy goes on to say, the harem gag was a bit unexpected, as I'm not used to seeing Roadrunner of all characters to act like that, but hey, I'm not judging him, he can be into whatever he wants. Yeah, man, everyone has their little personal time. And Judy concludes with, lastly, I feel like I've seen the gag where the invisible Wily falls through a bunch of clouds after stumbling off a cliff. Maybe I did when I was a kid, but I don't know, my memory is fuzzy. Yeah, that image of Wily going through the clouds, I think it was probably used in like probably the Chuck Jones documentary, Humans in Betweens, if I had to guess. But yeah. And Judy concludes with saying, anyway, look forward to hearing what you think. Well, Judy, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you enjoyed our thoughts, our observations on these three Cutter's Choice shorts. You want to cover this one? It's a Wily Coyote comic?
Yeah. Diallo Clement has been very helpful to the Save Coyote versus Acme movement. His illustrations and animation stuff has really been helpful to the fans who really want this movie to happen. And he actually sent us a comment about these Wile E. Coyote cartoons. He said, War and Peace is, in my opinion, one of the jewels of Wile E. Coyote's cartoons. It's one of the episodes I watched the most as a kid. The design of the characters is the apogee of the Chuck Joe style. You see, that's a word you don't hear a lot in comments on our show. The apogee. Like, very good. Yeah. With just the right amount of detail and the gags are visually rich, I would have loved more cartoons of this genre. To Beep or Not to Beep is on the same level. What a marvelous era.
Yes. That is an interesting take. We were not that much kind to War and Peace, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, yeah, you know, it's, I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, it's the kind of racist gag at the end that gives it any sort of variety, frankly, when it comes to to Wile E. Coyote cartoons, especially in this section, because it's really late.
It's just, it's... I mean, I get what you're trying to say about this style of, you know, this era of the Chuck Jones ones, but, like, yeah, it's not... to us, it doesn't compare to some of the real Golden Age ones, but, like, yeah, no, if it really... If it gave you this sort of idyllic idea of what these could be, then more power to you.
All right. So thanks so much for your comments this week. And thank you for your amazing fan art. And so Clay over Zachary thing.
Much appreciated. Yeah.
It's so good. I personally told him this. His art is so good and so tied to Clay over Zachary at this point that if and when... it does get released, and they do release the official marketing materials. It's going to feel weird. I'm not going to lie. It's going to feel weird. It's like, wait, what do you mean the poster isn't a red background with Wile E. Coyote getting splattered? It's like, what do you mean it's not that? It's like, no, that's actually really good fan art. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but thank you so much for your help there. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right, we have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M., for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
You know what's funny? I don't think we particularly enjoyed the Volume 2 shorts we picked either.
So we keep doing this to ourselves. Jesus.
Why?
I believe next week we're beginning to get towards our movie episode prep.
Yes, we are.
Woo!
Yes, so... You know, it's so funny. That was my go-to segue. Basically.
It is. It really is.
It is. Now, here's a witty observation for you. We covered a Chuck Avery short in this episode.
Yes.
Well, for next week, we are going to be looking at more Chuck Avery cartoons. And these are Chuck Avery cartoons we know. I made sure, we know these cartoons. Or at the very least, it's known Looney Tunes history. Yeah. So, these are Tex Avery cartoons from the Warner Brothers era. We're going to be doing some fun stuff with Tex in the next couple of weeks. So, we're covering Tex Avery, the Warner years, essentially.
Yes, in between the firings.
So, the shorts we are covering are Gold Diggers of 49.
Okay.
Picador Porky, ending with Porky's Preview.
Okay.
You know Porky's Preview.
Yes, they like that one. You know.
That is the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow me at MarkCallum1995.
And you can follow me at Tall Guy Schmidt.
Oh, shit, his voice is going.
I sound like Javi Feierstein now. I'm definitely not playing it up.
If you like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at that_Looney
both on Twitter, boy, and Instagram, or at the top of the podcast title. We are the first result. The Twitter's been crazy.
It's been insane. Last weekend.
I don't want to go into it. But no. It's been crazy.
We actually made it through the whole episode without mentioning the thing that it's been crazy about. I'm proud of us.
Yeah.
I'm proud of Mark, especially.
That's not. Thank you.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips and shorts from episodes on our feed. We also post some of those shorts to TikTok, which we have for some reason. And, of course, as always, you can support the podcasts on Patreon at www.patreon.com/TNQAF.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and I, for one, don't blame Wiley for wanting to go out for some Chinese. Good night.
So, Wiley Coyote walking in the rain.
With a Chinese menu in his hand. His hair was fabulous.